Denise and I are very happy to hear how it is for you all, what it's like for you. Whether that be an ecstatic utterance or the reflections on your retreat. That you didn't. This could also be a time for bringing up any other points of the Dharma that you would like us to consider together. So really, it's pretty open-ended. Yes. Okay. Somebody help.
Yeah, I'll translate. Okay.
אני רוצה קודם כל להגיד ש... אני משתתפת קודם כל בצערך על מות אימא שלך, והפתיחה שלך את הקורס בהודעה הזו שאימא שלך נפטרה, לי נורא ככה סתם הסתרגום כזה מאוד מאוד כאילו, זה היה מאוד כאילו לא טרומטי, זה היה כמו איזשהו אלם עבורי.
I'd just like to say, what is your name?
Mira.
Mira. Yeah. Said that at the beginning of the course, when she heard about the death of your mother, it did something to her. It was almost a shock.
Then מחשבות שאלו בי, לא מתכוונים. מחשבות ששאלו בי,
The thoughts that just came up was, how could you come to the course and do the course without going to the funeral of your mother?
ועלו בי המון שאלות, ולמזלי לא ניגשתי לשאול, כי אני לא כל כך טובה באנגלית.
She had a lot of questions, but it's good that she didn't go and ask, because she's not so good in English.
ולמעשה, כאילו האובדן, העניין של האובדן ליווה אותי לאורך כל הקורס.
The loss accompanied to the whole course.
אובדן, זאת אומרת, זה התפתח מהאובדן אישי שלך, לאובדן שלנו בארץ, לאובדנים בארץ של חיילים שמתים, של אנשים צעירים בתאונות דרכים, ש... אבות קוברים את הבנים שלהם, איך מתמודדים עם זה, המון המון שאלות שעלו בי תוך כדי, ואני חושבת שבמשך הקורס קיבלתי קצת תשובות בעניין הזה, בקשר, שזה התחבר לעניין של הארעיות, של הדברים המשתנים שחולפים כל הזמן, זאת אומרת, יש למעשה כל הזמן אובדנים, למרות שזה אובדן מאוד מאוד גדול, אם נהרג ילד, בצבא או בתאונת דרכים.
She said that your loss went inside, but it also awoke in her the various losses that are so dominant in this country, in the war, in accidents, and terror, and when a father loses the son, and all those things came up for her, but she also realized that there are other losses which are happening all the time.
Impermanent. Yeah. השתוקקות, עם הכעס, עם כל מה שיפה ולא יפה בעיניי ובעיני אחרים, מאוד גרם לי להתפתחות, ואפילו זה שלב שהוא דיבר ואמר, תהיו עם כל הדברים, עם כל הדברים שיש עולים, אז תהיו. ועלתה לי תמונה של אבא וילד, לא משנה באיזה גיל, ויש את כמו האווירה הזו בין אבא וילד שאומר לילד שלו, כשהוא בוכה, אתה יכול לבכות, מותר לך לבכות, מותר לך לכעוס, מותר לך דברים שבדרך כלל לי בילדות לא היו, זאת אומרת, אם היה כעס, זה לא יפה לכעוס, ואם היה פחד, אז מה פתאום את פוחדת?
She said that while you were the Dharma talks that you gave, a lot of it had to do with the legitimization of any feeling that would come up, and if it was anger or if it was to cry. And for her, coming from where she comes from, with the way she was brought up, you were not allowed to, you know, how can you cry or how can you be angry? And she had this image of a father and a boy, a son, and it was that he just gave the son this legitimacy to be exactly as he was and to allow the feelings to come up.
ואז גם הייתי פעם, זאת אומרת, כאילו עבר גם על עצמי, פעם הייתי הילד, פעם הייתי אבא, ואולי עוד מעט אני אספתה, ואז אפשר אולי ללמוד מזה משהו.
Sometimes she was the child, and sometimes she was the father, and sometimes she was even the grandmother, and it's possible to learn to be in all those three places.
ועוד משהו כתבתי. כן. העניין הזה של להיות ברגע, של לוותר על הרצונות שלנו, על המחר היותר טוב שלנו, שמה שבדרך כלל אותי מאוד מנחם, שכשרע לי ושלא טוב לי, אני חושבת, מחר בטח יהיה הרבה יותר טוב, וזה נשען על המון דברים אחד הדברים שאני הכי זוכרת מהציטוטים, זה הציטוט של סקארלט אוהרה, מהסרט חלף עם הרוח, מחר יהיה יום חדש. ואני מאוד נשענת על זה בדרך כלל, ופתאום להיות בלי זה, ולהישאר עם הרגע, ומה זה הרגע הזה, זה נראה לי פתאום נורא נורא לא יציב ולא...
She said that this whole idea for her of being in the present and staying in the moment, because she's used to telling herself that tomorrow will be better, and that she's kind of really, you know, has taken from Gone with the Wind Scarlett O'Hara saying, you know, tomorrow is another day, and that helps her to get through the difficult moments. And she said, having that taken away from her, you know, what do you do with these, what do you do, how do you deal with the feelings and the thoughts and the sensations which are difficult, which come up?
זאת אומרת, להיות ברגע הזה, זה מאוד קשה לי, ואפילו באותו רגע שזה קרה, אמרתי לעצמי, זה כל כך משעמם רגע הזה, מה זה? זה מאוד משעמם. ויחד עם זה, גם באמת, הרגשתי איזשהו עובדה של חלק מהזהות שלי, מפני שזה נדבך מאוד חשוב בחיים שלי, העניין הזה של המחשבות של מחר, שמחר יהיה טוב, מחר תהיה שמש, מחר אני אוכל ללכת בנוף, מחר אני אוכל ללכת לשחות, או כל מיני כאלה דברים. אז זה ממש כאילו חלק מהעובדן הזהות שלי.
She felt that it was a loss of her identity, the fact that she couldn't go to tomorrow, to think that tomorrow I can go to swim, tomorrow I can get... So that was very difficult for her. It was also a little bit boring, just staying with the present moment, because she's so used to focusing into the future.
Thank you.
First,
very, very thank you for sharing all those feelings around my mother and your responses. I appreciate that. And briefly about the second. To die is okay. To die, sometimes if we don't die, if we don't let something go, we don't grow. When we let something go, it's scary in between, but something new can come. the, according to the Buddha, the best way to make tomorrow happy, the best way to make tomorrow good, is to learn more and more to be here, to be here, because that allows us to really feel. So yes, there's a dying away, and it's painful, but I encourage you to trust the way to make tomorrow happy is to learn to fully be here. And you can even tell us, the Buddha did say, this teaching is beautiful in the beginning, it's beautiful in the middle, and it's also beautiful in the end. So when you need to think about the future, say, okay, the Buddha did say that the more I practice now, the more I'll be able to understand and appreciate the future. So it's okay to think of the future. But if you only think of the future and get excited and don't learn how to see the present moment, then you'll always be leaning. So anyway, those are some thoughts.
יש לי עוד דבר אחד אחרון, וזה קשור לתרנגול. אני חושבת שברוב הלילות התעוררתי מהתרנגול, ונשארתי לשכב במיטה, ולא ידעתי בדיוק מה השעה. ביום שישי התרנגול קרקר לו את הקרקור שלו, ואמרתי, טוב, אני הולכת להתפלל, בטח 5:15, לקחתי את המגבת, את הכל, אני יוצאת החוצה, 3:15. טוב, רגע אמרתי, אני רוצה אותו על הצלחת, אני לא רוצה שיהיה ברווז, לא רוצה שיהיה זה, אני רוצה אותו על הצלחת שלי. ואז חשבתי שזה לא יפה, מה, אתה יכול לדבר על זה שמצאת איתי? אז אמרתי,
She said that she had an incident with the cock that crows in the morning. She heard it, and when she heard it, she immediately got up because she said it must be 5:00, and she got up and she took a towel and she started getting ready, and she looked at her watch, it was 3:00, and she said at that moment she wanted the cock, the chicken, on the plate, and she wanted to
basically that's it. אז הייתי רוצה שהתרנגול יהיה דג.
She remembered to be a Buddhist, in a Buddhist way, she wanted the jerky to be a fish.
She's also alive.
Yeah, but he can't make noise. אני רוצה להודות
למתרגמים שתרגמו לנו את השיחות, שהעבירו לנו על מה מדובר.
She wants to thank the people who translated the Dharma and your talks.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Please.
How did you do? What happened for you?
Well, there's so many things, but I think it's a comment, it's a reflection, and also a question. I was surprised by, for myself, just how much being newly married, how much came up for me, the reflections on my relationship and my love for my husband and all these things that I just didn't expect, which is nice, because I didn't know. And I was also very moved by your relationship and the sense of knowing that you were married and that you do this work together, and wondering on a practical level how you bring your practice into your relationship.
I have really found being in relationship very supportive. You know, it also has its challenges. Forgive me for saying, but for you know, it's you can't you know, you're very real with each other. When you first fall in love, it's very ideal, and then you have to negotiate each other's human beings and what you bring to the relationship. So, but I find there has a lot of sweetness in it. And it's nice to have a companion along the way. And after, you know, we've been together 16 years now, and you share a lot of life together, a lot of history, a lot of struggles and so on. And it's, you know, the sense of having someone that can understand that, that shared that life with you. And at the end of the day, being able to go home from whatever you're doing and have that partnership is very supportive. It's very nourishing. It's not an ultimate dharma because, you know, also in relationship we're all subjected to impermanence. And but in terms of a support and in terms of a vehicle for learning, you know, because sometimes it's very beautiful and very harmonious, and other times I hope you don't overly idealize us because we also have our meltdowns and arguments and disagreements, and we come from very different cultural backgrounds. So Kirisara's take on something as an American and mine from the UK, sometimes it's like different. So there's that too. But I think because we have the practice of the Dhamma and we try and bring it back to that and reflect and try and stay honest and open, which isn't always easy in an intimate relationship, but to try and just really work through these things, and to so you allow a deepening of trust, you know. So for me, it's the relationship we have together is very precious. We've worked together, lived together, but we're also now spending time apart, which has also been very helpful to give each other space. Because sometimes when you're in relationship, you just feel yourself shaped a little bit about the relationship. So when you have time apart, you can feel your own energy again. And Kirisara just spent a year in retreat at the Hermitage. I didn't feel I could do a year retreat. So I went back to the UK and I'm doing an MA in Buddhist psychotherapy. So it's something that I'm interested in. And probably I need a lot of therapy. but you know, it's also nice to feel that we can give space to each other and then come back into relationship. But it's a dhamma, it's a practice as well. So there's many different dimensions to it.
Well, I didn't plan on talking, but after you... We're talking about relationship now, and that you all titled guests we threw out together. To thank this place and you also of the, it was very unexpectable. I mean, I did expect this to be, because as I know retreats, you know, everybody is alone. I thought I'd be alone and she'd be alone and probably separated. I didn't know Tovana before also, so. And suddenly this opportunity came. I don't know, it felt okay to do this, and we received here something very different from a retreat made alone, but also amazingly, I don't know, it was together, it was a retreat together, and it was very, very, you know, you see, I can't express it, it's amazing. And we could catch all of this learning with Daniel by meditation, by the Dhamma talks, by and reflect it into our relationship and into our love, and to understand that being in the moment with the one you love, it's something so magical. Mm-hmm. It's like I had this meditation after I talked with you. I could meditate, and I had this one moment that I was really in the moment, and suddenly it felt like I had this something around me all of my life, and suddenly something is open and I can see everything clear, very, very, very clear. Because the mind doesn't buzz. So there's this silence and this clearness. And you are in the moment. It was amazing. And the first thing, when this feeling comes, you want to run it. It's the best feeling. I can't believe I'm feeling that. And of course, the moment you want to grab it, then it goes. So the same thing with when I look to my love's eyes, I can go to that same place, and then suddenly each moment I look at her, she looks different. Because everything is changing, you know. It's that's the same things we learned here, and suddenly, with the help of love, it was even easier to see that. I don't know. So, again, the most important thing for me is to say thank you, because it's amazing that we could have this opportunity here. All of you people that expected. Accepted us, yes. It was probably very different. and this place, and you also, and really thank you.
Thank you. So there's a doorway through love, not just suffering.
Answer my question.
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. Thank you.
I have two questions. Yeah. One concerning Buddhist psychotherapists, if you can speak a little bit about it. And the second thing is about, you said you're both Buddhists as a religion. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't practice this here religion. I would want if you can speak a little bit about Buddha's views about religion, and how our practice can live together with our religion.
Those are just a few little questions, right?
So,
okay. I'll first say a little bit about the religion. It's a matter of how one uses the words, but I like to use the word religion. But like sometimes when people would use words, the Buddha would use the same word, but he'd give it a new meaning so that it's useful. Religion as having to believe this, having to believe that. I'm not using religion in that way. I'm trying to use the word again to mean attaching yourself to something mindfully for the sake of freedom. The original meaning of the word religere. Ligere means to bind, to bring back together again. Yoga has the same meaning. It means to bind. But it's a binding that is not to trap you, it's a binding to help you see clearly to become free. Now, the Buddha said, actually, for a religion to do its purpose, he gave two images. He said, one is like a raft.
A raft.
And you're standing on a dangerous shore. Dangerous. wild animals, danger, harm, sickness, and you see a safe place across this turbulent body of water, river. And he said, you learn to pick things from this bank, twigs, grass, branches, what's available where you are here and now, and you put them together and then use it to help move across this dangerous water to arrive at safety. But then he says the raft, you put the raft down. You realize it's something to use, but you don't carry it on your head all the time, because that clinging also takes you back to the other side. You put it down so that you can give to others, so that you can share it. So religion is a tool. It's not the religion, meaning watching the breath, chanting, mindfulness, reflecting on death. All these are like the twigs, branches, things that one uses from one's body and life that help one negotiate suffering and find the place of peace in the heart. But the place of peace in the heart is not like this. So even the good things like religion, if you cling to bad things, it's obvious. You cling to hatred, that doesn't take you to safety. But even if you cling to your religion, I'm the best, that keeps you from experiencing the safety of peace, of letting go. So I'm using the word in a particular way, a set of practices that take you to peace. I call that a religion. He said it's also like a snake, poisonous snake. If you pick a snake up in the wrong way, you grab its tail, it comes back around and bites you and you die. Poisonous snake is powerful. Religions are powerful. The Buddha said religion is like a poisonous snake. He says you pick it up correctly, carefully, behind the head. Then, if you're very mindful, then you can, if you have a reason, maybe to use the poison for medicine or something. He said if you pick up religious teaching in the wrong way, it hurts yourself and hurts another. And the wrong way is picking it up out of pride. I have the right way. Picking it up so that I have knowledge to say, I know and you don't know. I know and you don't know. I know and you don't know. These are examples he gave of picking it up wrongly. But he said if you pick up religion appreciating its power, pick it up carefully. And he says, what is the right way to pick up a religion? He said the right way to pick it up is knowing that you're picking this up for the sake of freedom, for the sake of understanding, for the sake of purifying the heart. Then he says, you don't hurt yourself and you don't hurt another. So those are some thoughts.
Yeah, I think just to add a little bit to that, because, you know, being aware, teaching in the context of yourselves as and of practitioners of Judaism to some degree or another, which is much more than a religion in a way. It's a more also your identity as a nation. There's so much carried in there that I have respect for that. And my sense is, in terms of how to extract what's useful from what's offered from the body of Buddhism, which serves many people in many, many different ways. There's many different expressions. It's that discernment that we can feel what is helpful for me, and then just to leave the rest, you know, if it feels like this isn't speaking to me. But one doesn't, when one leaves the rest, one doesn't have to dismiss it, because it can be useful for someone else, you know. So I think it's that way that we are, that we can discern. And it, you know, that's a big territory. For us as well, you know, for me, it's...
I think that reminds me what you're saying of... To be following the Buddha's teachings doesn't mean to say one even has to call oneself a Buddhist. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a big deal, card-carrying Buddhist. Where's my card? He would even people who followed other religions and wanted to convert, he would say... wouldn't even encourage them to do that. He'd say, look into your heart, and if you see what's good and leads to peace, harmony, goodness, do that. You see in your heart what is bad. You recognize what leads to conflict, what leads to suffering, then you let that go. As far as the Buddha is concerned, that's then practicing the Dhamma. That's what, to me, practicing the religion is. It's not so much carrying a banner or a placard. So I think the Dhamma blends very nicely with all sorts of things. You know, it's I don't feel I can go into a temple and praise God, and I don't feel like I'm denying my Buddhism or anything. I feel there's a place where the religions are pointing to the pure heart. Mm. And but that's how I feel. I don't know what it's like being in this culture.
Ajahn Chah was very interesting because he there was a nun, one of the first Western nuns that came to Wat Pa Pong in the 70s, and she was American, and she became a nun, disciple. And then somewhere along the line, she converted to become a fundamentalist Christian, which was odd, but anyhow. And she became very rabid, as they do. And she kind of started, then Ajahn Sumedho, our teacher in the UK, brought a group of British practitioners, monastery supporters, to Thailand to meet Ajahn Chah and the community there. And when they arrived, this nun tried to convert them all to Christianity, and she was going on about how Buddhism was, you know, the lesser way, and Ajahn Chah was the devil, and Ajahn Sumedho got really upset, you know, and he just thought, and he went to Ajahn Chah to complain, you know, like this woman, she's saying this and she's saying that, and how can you let her here, and she's saying that Buddhism's no good and Christianity's better. And Ajahn Chah just sat there and listened, and at the end of it all, he said, maybe she's right. yeah, there's something about holding it lightly, yeah. Maybe. I'll come back to the therapy one. Let's hear a bit more from the group, and I'll, because that's another one. Yeah.
Mm. In the continuity to speak about the religious, I'll speak in English, but it will be in Israeli English. So you might have a translation to real English. I want to thank you about to thank you for your tolerance to other religious. The whole tolerance that you brought us, I really believe. I had some chashashot.
Fears.
Yeah. Maybe I will feel a little bit threatened or something. But I really believe that the Buddhism, the Judaism starts with where the Buddhism ends. So you I feel that you give me the elements, the essence, the most fundamental the most element thing for my mental life, to be in quiet, to love to be here now, to know what I need, what I feel, what is good for me. And after I have it, I can really choose, like you say, in freedom, how I want to live my life. And I felt that about the religious, and that this place let me, I prayed every morning about a hour and a half. In my home, I pray about 20 minutes. Mm. So I feel like I open the religious text and I read it as new. I felt that I found my belief in your talks about Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
I hoped, I don't know how to say it. I don't know how you got the point of Shabbos more than many of other that are keeping the Shabbos but not understand it as you catch it. It was very meaningful for me. And I have many things, but I can. And I read בעברית. אני רוצה גם להודות לכולם. זה לא כל כך להודות. לא יודע איך להגיד את זה. באמת, לא יודע, הכיף של האנשים פה, האור בעיניים, המהירות פנים הזאת, ממש מילאה אותי. אני חושב שכולם נראים לי פה שונים מיום ראשון עד שבת. אני יושב פה שעות ככה, יש לי פה נקודת תצפית טובה, ממציא לכל אחד את הסיפור חיים שלו. הייתי מת לדעת את הסיפור האמיתי של כל אחד ואחד, כי באמת כל אחד ואחד נראה פה סיפור מקסים. וזה אחד הדברים, חוץ מהשתיקה, חוץ מכל התרגול, אחד הדברים שהכי מילאו אותי פה, זה באמת, לא יודע מה, השקט הזה, המקום, הקונספט, לא יודע מה, מוצאים מכל האנשים פה כתוב, וזה... עם זה אני חוזר גם כן נורא מלא הביתה. אתם יכולים לתרגם לנו.
He was just saying to all of us, thanks to all of us, the light that we share together and that just being here, and he see each one of us, he made a whole life story for each one of us. And we look differently from Sunday to Shabbat. Mm-hmm. And this quietness and this
your story about being a nun and trying to explain something to your family reminded me of a Hasidic story, you know, the Judaic movement of the 19th centuries, about one rabbi in the chain of rabbis, who said that when he came close to the love of God, I don't know the terms, but when he came close to the love of God, he was enthusiastic and he wanted all the people of his little town understand what he came to understand, and he couldn't. So he said that he should approach his closer community, a synagogue or something like this, and there was no response. So he said, I'll go to my close family, and he wanted them to be with the things he arrived at, and he didn't succeed. So he said, I turned to myself, and even this I have not yet accomplished. So what I understand in this, that when I come to Tel Aviv, my daughters ask me, oh, how was it? Fine? Nice for you. I'm happy for you. Close story.
Exactly.
I know this is the case with my friends too. And the truth is that it shouldn't be otherwise. Because as I understand, the only way to convey something is to be. In this I still can promise, as this rabbi said.
Thank you. I like to share. My name is Michal, and for about 8-9 years, before 8-9 years, I did my first Goenkaji ways Buddhist retreat. I'll try. A few weeks ago, I heard about this retreat, only old student retreat, and I was saying, wow, that's gonna be a really quiet and nice retreat. And but I couldn't go because job, study, blah blah blah. And I've been fired 2 weeks ago. I said, wow, that's good timing. Yeah, I'm going to retreat. And in the first few days, I was like, oh my God. Teachers are wonderful, they're really wonderful, but they talk so much. It's not a really quiet retreat. I can't do it. I need to go out from here. And I didn't really listening, and I was half sleeping most of the time of the meditation. I need to lay down a lot of times, not only for sleeping, but just to lay down. And after in the third day, I was about just going out. And I know there was a lot of doubts in every retreat that I done, doubts coming up. And this one was like, I was very agitated, and I was like, it's not my place. And thanks to Ilan that was talking with me, and I like got the permission to be tired and to be with doubts, and so, and to be confusion. And because I got this permission, and I need this permission, the first morning after the fourth day, it was like, I'm waking up and I'm here. And I was really started to really listening and really be with, and waking up in with the male chicken. And I'm waking up 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't know the hours because I don't have a watch. And I said, ah, that's good. I have more time to practice yoga. And then it was like, doesn't matter when I wake up and what I do, I was just like trying to be. And when your teaching was, for me, was a jewel. And because I really started to listen by heart. And I wanted to somehow the word thank you doesn't sound really what I want to share, but I don't know any other words, not in English, to be around you, to be nearby you, and to get the inspiration from you. Every doubt that I had, maybe it's good that I had them, they're just behind me. And I feel like my heart opening thanks to you, and just you're so inspiration for me, and so inspiring to be around you and to know you. And I hope it's not the last time that we're gonna meet and practicing together.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Just briefly. And the times when I project my mind into the future, when I won't be here and I'm with my family and my husband, and I think, now how am I going to deal with it this time? You know, what am I going to say? Because the last time when I came back from a retreat, I thought to myself, well, what I'll say is ask questions. No questions. No questions. So I thought to myself, this time what I'll say is, you know, when they ask me how it was, my answer, it's taken me time to reach this answer. The answer for me is it was challenging, really challenging, and it was also wonderful. And there were times that I really felt like, you know, I want to get out of here. I mean, this is like, you know, this drowsiness that, you know, it's already the third, fourth day and I'm still drowsy, you know. It was really hard for me to, it was impossible for me to be with the drowsiness and to be aware that I'm separate from the drowsiness. So it was a kind of suffering. I mean, there's no question that Do you have anything to say about that?
I have a confession. Every retreat I want to get out of it. Except I'm facilitating it, so I can't. So.
Got it.
Yeah, I think that it's hard. They're hard. Because this expression of Ajahn Sujito, eyeball to eyeball with our karma, you know, it's like...
And in your face.
In your face. And these tendencies, drowsiness, doubt, you know, and then first of all we think it's this one, it's that one, and, you know, if I move... And I think a lot of our job is just to try and encourage me, as well as everyone else, just to stay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let the, you know... Let the presence, the awareness, to work on the process, and you know, it's not to underestimate the power of even a little bit of sensing. Rather than I am the drowsiness, there is the drowsiness. I mean, that's a beginning of a big shift, you know. And some of these sankhara, some of these deep tendencies that just shape us our whole life, we're not very conscious about.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment when you say, I am not this deep sense of anxiety and fear, that it's there, it's a conditioning, it has an energetic effect, it shapes the sense of self, but I can see it arising and passing. And then what is seeing it isn't the drowsiness. What sees it is clear, it's strong, it's peaceful, it's stable. So that's, I mean, that kind of shift is, you know, big fruit. So even if it's momentarily.
I had an experience where one evening I started feeling very dizzy, and it came and it went, and then it came and it went, and it happened about four times, and I was like holding onto the walls. And I have a friend here who's been also. So I thought, oh my God, I've caught it, you know. And I decided to stay in my room, and my way is immediately to get into bed. And you know. And I was able to, because what I noticed was the mounting anxiety. You know, I'm alone here, I'm not with my family, how am I going to deal with it? I wish I had a Valium, you know, something that'll stop the anxiety. And then I could see that there was the dizziness, and there was the feelings of anxiety and fear around the dizziness. You know, I'm going to die, who knows what it is, all that kind of thing. And I was slowly able to, you know, be there, and I know you, Mara, you know, that kind of thing. And it actually disappeared, you know, the feelings. And so that felt wonderful. So for that, I'm very grateful.
Yeah, please, have a couple more, and then we
shift gears. I just want to thank you very much for a combination of a traditional and soft retreat. Because before I came to you, I need to choose or very tough Burmese things, not only Guenca, many others, and or just Westerners that I don't really know what's the connection between them and the Buddha, and the Buddha teaching, and the Dharma, at all, and they mix it with many other things, and I was looking very long time for this combination, and it's really touched my heart to see that there is that it's can happen. And it can be alive, and all of this knowing that it's happened, that there is that what the Buddha taught was very soft and full of mysterious and connected to the land, and not only or tough or too much too analytic or whatever other things can combine other paths that I practice, spiritual path, with this, and excellent. Give me a lot of ease. That it's not contradicted, that it can be one thing.
Excellent.
And also, a lot of the process I have in this retreat was letting go of all my views about the Dharma itself, which is something that very immediately I took it into a monastic way of life, and I really love the teachings that encourage Dharma to be within life, inside life, inside daily life, and it's also helped me a lot understanding my stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, there's when you read the original suttas, so much of the Buddhas and the disciples' way was in nature. They didn't sit in, you know, they had halls and things, but it wasn't like this retreat thing is a bit contrived. They would be walking in nature, being in nature, sitting with trees. There's something much, it is softer about that. I mean, it was a hard way of life, but there was also something more connected. So it's, thank you for your reflections. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Judy, and as usual, the oldest person. I guess you could call it a slight breakthrough that happened to me. It was sort of a decision ahead of time to bring a bit of humor into the meditation. And I am aware, of course, that my thoughts, like everybody's thoughts, are repetitive, and they fall into kind of categories, right? There's the future script, there's the memory script, there's the household script, there's the people script, and so on and so forth. And I recognize them, and when they come up, I just sort of say to myself, oh, there's the memory script coming up. Been there, done it, move on. And it's a bit of humor, and it's it lightens it up, and it's helpful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very good.
Yes, it's as Wavy Gravy said, if you haven't got a sense of humor, it just isn't funny.
Very, very touched by all the things I've heard this morning. I've learned so much. It's been a wonderful experience working in the kitchen, working with my friends, and I've been able to reduce this judgment in myself and in my friends, and see them as wonderful people, and all of you too. And I think that even though I know that there's so much benefit also sitting, but there's a lot of benefit also giving service. It's a wonderful experience. And thank you so much for all the time we've spent together as being part of the team with you. It's really been very special. Thank you.
Just to say thank you also to the team, without whom we should be in trouble. So thank you for all the work.
During the days of this retreat, it became clear to me how important and essential is the support of the service for my practice, for our practice. Your teaching and the service of everybody in the kitchen, managing, taking care of indoor, trying to make it a nice center. I appreciate all this effort that people made, and I wish all the people who are part of it that their practice will be supported in a similar way, like my practice, our practice was supported by you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
אני רוצה להגיד תודה רבה למנהלים שהיה נורא מהם לפגוש אותם, גם לא היו בלחץ ולא ראיתי אותם כל הזמן רצים, זאת אומרת היה נורא היה בניהול המון המון שלווה, המון שקט. ולעובדי המטבח האוכל היה מדהים, פשוט מאוד 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 טעים ומאוד מוגז.
She said thank you for the managers
and
to the team.
אבל היה טעים, טעים, טעים. והיה
כיף להיכנס למטבח. You want to be translated at all?
No.
It's
okay.
Okay,
thank you. I just wanted to come back to Ludi's question a little bit about Monday and Tuesday there's a 2-day workshop gathering, Dharma Sangha gathering. I think, is that organized by Tovana, Ron?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the themes is about the interface of therapy and and meditation.
Tuesday.
But it's also Monday and Tuesday. There's 2 day longs.
Evening?
No, there's a talk in the morning on one of the days, and then in the evening. Maybe we don't know. Anyway, is it on the internet?
Yes.
Yeah. So if
I speak about it.
You speak about it. But the training I'm doing is a Buddhist based psychotherapy in the UK with the Karuna Institute. Mm. Which has some of the work has happened here, I think.
Yeah.
With someone called Ian Rees. Yeah. And it's based a little bit in the understanding of a Buddhist approach. So it's an awareness space. It's almost like having someone else in your meditation practice. It's very present moment. It's based on the sense of the philosophy that underneath all the sankhara, the patternings, which in Western terms we would call psychological shaping, underneath all of that there's basic health, or you know, the jitta, the heart in its is basically healthy, rather than coming from the point of view of your pathology, coming from the point of view of basic health, and then seeing the layerings and trying to uncover. It mixes a little bit with some developmental understanding of the shaping of self through developmental processes, right from conception, through the womb, through birth, through early life, pre-verbal. And it's effective in terms of both as a meditation and helping sometimes when you've got someone else holding that awareness and inquiring with you. It helps sometimes quicken the inquiry to explore what is present in your psychological shaping. And it's also, I'm doing that course, not so much, I mean it's interesting in terms of the academic and all that, but I did it to enter therapeutic process myself to explore the healing of early woundings in my life that I felt in meditation I would kind of come to the edge of and could see, but I wanted to a little bit more access into the content and the unpackaging, and I felt like I needed help with that. So several times in my meditative life I've gone into a therapeutic process. I like the way Ram Dass talks about it. He says it's a bit like cooking soup or cooking chicken broth and that stuff, you know, as you meditate it is a bit like you're cooking, you know, you're bringing awareness, mixing it into the stuff of your life. And he says it's a bit like the stuff, you know, the you skim off comes to the surface. And the therapies like helps you just skim. You know, just help you see and heal and release from some of the patternings are so, it can be very deep, and the defenses around them are very powerful. So therapeutic relationship is partly, I mean, this is, forgive me for you that are much more experienced here in this audience as psychotherapists, because I feel very, you know, this isn't my territory, but it building up that relationship of trust, empathy, sometimes just help, a softening and an opening that allows. I've been very surprised at the power of how the psyche, when there's safety, which is what therapeutic process allows, when there's compassion, when there's inquiry, sometimes those places in us that have been defended, that are wounded, that create a symptom that we might not be able to understand the cause of, anxiety or fear, or for me, my big sankhara is about worth, lack of worth. And you get the symptom of it as fear or lack of confidence, but you can't always, I couldn't always get to the root. And the therapeutic process gently and has allowed me to sense into and touch the root, which is very painful, you know, and touching the root and beginning to heal and emerge and let that go. So it has different functions, but I feel that, I mean, I guess there's so many, like meditation, there's so many different therapies, so many different approaches. But I feel if it's based in the premise of respecting the fundamental health of the other, not just that there's something wrong with you that needs to be fixed, and there's compassion, and then there's inquiry, then I feel that that sets the ground in a way that can be very complementary to the meditative process.
Sure, it's lovely to hear from everyone. But in the spirit of also being aware of the time and our closing, perhaps we could just take a few minutes to stretch, and then we could have a.